You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Can you hear me all right? I'm not entirely sure if this microphone is still working.
You sound fantastic.
Yes, absolutely fine.
Ah, good, 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 good. Like I say, it was under a mound of DIY stuff that's over there, so it's already started for this year.
What do you mean it's already started? It's May!
Yeah. Well, last year's only just finished last
it.
Month, so it's now this is the new cycle. I had 1 month off, and that was it.
It's just funny because in my head, I feel like I still need to take the Christmas decorations down, but actually, we've already had Easter. I mean, the Christmas decorations are down, but you know, it just goes so fast, doesn't it?
It does.
It does.
And you had your birthday, Paul.
I did.
Yes. How was it?
Happy birthday.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Oh, we are recording. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for the happy birthdays, etc. Yeah. I'm old.
Are you?
Officially, I'm old now. No, it's good. We what did we do? We on Saturday we went into Liverpool and to a restaurant called the Panoramic 34. It's called 34 because it is 34 floors up.
Oh,
and you
and you
get a
have to walk each one.
Is this the one in the radio tower?
No, it's not. It is one in a tower
Okay.
that is almost on the front. It's right next door to Costco, and a little bit further
Right.
down is the new Everton football stadium that they've just built.
Right. I
So,
know where you are, yeah.
yeah.
By the old Toys R Us.
Yes, indeed. So we went up there and we got a nice window side table and with a view over the docks mostly. But if you turned around slightly, you could see across the River Mersey and onto the Wirral where we live. So that was very good. Watched all the tankers coming in and docking and all the tugs going out and helping them around and all the little people doing their shopping in Costco and all that. So yeah, it was very good. We had an afternoon tea, which consisted of sandwiches and lots of cakes. So it was a very posh place. So we had to get into our best gear, only to find that the guy sitting in the table next to us had shorts and t-shirt on, and somebody else came in a football top. So, yeah, no accounting
Look
for
at the
taste.
Mersey. So look
Yeah,
at the Mersey.
proper Scousers, you know, come to look at me football club like. So that was good, and then and it was beautiful weather as well. It was a nice clear day. We could see right across the Wirral, which is a good, 2 miles across the Mersey, another 10 miles or so across the Wirral maybe, and then another 10 miles across the River Dee. So that's, 25 miles or 22 miles we can see into Wales. And then you can see another 20 miles or so inland to that. You can see the Welsh Mountains. So it was a really, really clear day. Nice, good visibility. And then Sunday we went out to Park Gate, which is on the side of the River Dee, and of
Hang
course
on, wait.
go on.
Did you have to remortgage your house to buy some fish and chips? Because the Parkgate fish and chips are the most expensive in the whole world.
Don't say that because that's where we're going to take Sean when he comes across.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Sean, I'll come and lunch is on you.
Great.
So yeah, so we were on the riverbank on the other side of the Mersey, on the other side of the Wirral, sorry, and again, nice sunny day, and one of my friends, you probably heard me talking about him on the podcast before, Paul Schofield. He sometimes listens to the show as well, and we met up with him and his wife, and we had a nice roast meal, followed by a Nichols ice cream, which of course you have to do when you go to Parkgate. Nichols is world famous on the Wirral. And it supplies a lot of cafes and restaurants with their ice cream. So beautiful, beautiful ice cream, rum and raisin. You can't beat it. So yeah. Again,
Like such a great birthday.
It is.
I love Parkgate. It's lovely, especially in this weather when it starts to get warmer.
I get frustrated every time I go because I just look at it and say, "Look, you got 10 miles of estuary there, and you've got this really narrow road, which people park at the side of the road, which is perfectly legal. There are houses, on the other side of the road, and in the middle, the road is very narrow, and then narrows down to one lane at one point, where there's a house that's really close to the edge. So the traffic is just building up all the time. There's not enough parking spaces for everybody to get there. So it's just traffic just driving up and down the road looking for somewhere to park. If they extended the promenade a little bit, maybe 20 feet, what would happen? Well, it would take out a little bit of a walking path that people have used because they would go down onto the silted up river and walk along there because it's too busy to walk on the road. So it would take out some of that, in which case you would then have another 20 feet of some parking spaces, which could be end on instead of side by side, sideways on. And then you'd have this great walking path that everybody could use right away. They could take the dogs up there, they could do all that. And you can get more parking in, more cars in. More cars mean more people come to buy ice creams and go to the restaurants there and go to the pubs. Everybody's a winner. But nobody will do it because they're frightened of killing off all the mosquitoes that sit 20 feet away from the side of the path. There's no birds there. The birds are further out. The birds are 200 feet away in a nicely constructed little area that they've had made for them. Just build an extra bit on the other side of the world where we were on the Saturday. They've got a beautiful wide promenade, about 50 foot wide, and people can walk from, pretty much all the way down to, from Birkenhead all the way up to New Brighton, which is a good 10 miles or so, maybe less, up to New Brighton, and then you can carry on along the top of the world, and you can, to a certain degree, come back down again through the world. There is some promenade along there, but then it fades out on some of the best parts of it. So you can look across to the birds, look across to the whales, the mountains. It's great. But anyway, that's my little soapbox speech over with. And nobody listens to this anyway, so nobody's ever going to do it. But I don't know where they get the money from either. So then Monday was just a rest day. And then tomorrow, as we record on a Wednesday. This will be. What date are we on that 7th? So we're on the 8th of May. We're going around to my eldest son's for a meal, and then Friday we go out with my dad, who's taking us out for our birthday meals, both me and my wife. So this diet that I was supposed to be on because we're going on a holiday in 2 weeks' time is just gone straight out the window.
You can do a crash one. You'll be fine. You'll recover.
If I don't eat for the next 2 weeks.
Exactly. Yeah, done.
So there you go. So, how was everybody else's week or month, seeing as we haven't spoken for a while?
We had our anniversary on Sunday.
Oh, of very
Course.
good. Yes, of
Yes.
course. Same as my
And it,
birthday, yes.
yes. And in the garden. That's right. Yeah, we planted a tree for our 1 year. Yeah. Just did a bunch of yard work and
Congratulations.
yard sailing. Thank you. Just had a nice weekend.
Keep
Oh,
planting them trees
that's gone
every
so
anniversary.
fast.
It has, hasn't it? Keep planting those trees every anniversary. You'll have a forest in a few years' time.
There you go. That's right.
So, Dan, what have you been up to? Anything at all?
Me, my eldest celebrated their 15th birthday yesterday, and we
15?
obviously, I know, yeah, we had the big party over the weekend. We spent all of Saturday getting the garden ready. Beautiful sunshine, 28 degrees it got up to in the back garden. Absolutely beautiful. We thought, it's going to be a wonderful thing. Well, maybe we'll get the barbecue out. We don't normally get it out, but we'll get it. Sunday came along, the temperature dropped by 12 degrees. It was grey, overcast, and all of the families were sat outside with blankets and coats on. My sister-in-law has actually bought one of those urns, those ones you see in like, the food banks and things like that, doling out the free coffees and stuff, one of these giant ones. She's bought one so that because we all drink tea and coffee till it's coming out of our ears, we've just decided every party she's going to wheel it around. It's like a giant, I don't know, R2-D2 just sitting there, and it just whirs up with this horrible grinding noise as it boils up. But it was working overtime on Sunday because it was so cold, and everyone was just mainlining tea or coffee just to stay warm. Then we bit the bullet, and everyone came indoors afterwards. But no, yeah, 15-year-olds. I now have a 15-year-old, and yeah, they're about to sit their GCSE next week, which is the first of the English Lit papers, which is Macbeth and the Christmas Carol. So there we go.
Ooh.
I don't feel old.
No.
It's fine.
You youngsters, I don't know. So, Casey, what have you been up to over the last month or so? Any more skinny dipping at all?
Paul, it's not skinny dipping, it's just dipping.
Oh.
There's you get different badges for cold water swimming when you do like when you achieve when you have an achievement that you've met. So like every month has a different full moon. This month's the pink moon. You know, like there's like the worm moon, the cold moon, the beaver moon. None of these are to do with skinny dipping. Last month was the pink moon. This month is the flower moon. So you get like a badge for every full moon dip you do. You can get badges for milestones like 25 dips, 50 dips, 100 dips. There is a badge called the Muffeteer badge. And if you do a skinny dip, then you get to have the Muffeteer badge. I can tell you now, I do not own the Muffeteer badge. There was a group of women that do own the Muffeteer badge, and they said that they all arranged to go down because you have to dip with the tide times. We dip in the Irish Sea. One of the bays that we dip in is quite treacherous, and the tides change very fast. So we always get provided the safest times to go in the sea from the RNLI at the start of each month. So 2 hours before high tide is the best time to go dipping. You can't go in low tide because you'll be walking for miles before you get to the water, and it comes in so fast. And high tide is all the way up against the wall. So 2 hours before high tide, perfect time to go dipping, safest time to go dipping. Some of the women looked, these are mature women as well. Most of them are retired. They were all looking for a time to earn their Muffeteer badges. And they were like, oh, look, on this date, there's a dip at 5:30 a.m. So why don't we go then? The beach will be quiet. There'll be no one around. You know, if we line our chairs up by the edge of the sea with our dry robes on the back, we can just run in the water and then get out and put our coats on. So they had it all worked out. And when they got down there and started like squealing and giggling, because that's what happens, you know, whether you're getting in the water fully clothed or in your birthday suit, there's always so much squealing because the water's freezing cold. Yeah, they turned around and realized that tucked in the corner of the beach was one little man camping on his own. So he was very rudely awakened by a group of gaggling women earning their Muffeteer badges at 5:30 in the
He'd been waiting there a month
morning.
since the last one, thinking they must come back at some point.
He's shivering there with like a phone going like, "Oh, it's the pink moon. They'll be here any minute."
So yeah, that's I love to hear those stories. This is the type of thing you hear when you go down to the beach and everybody's sitting around, you know, before or after a swim in the sea. There's usually like homemade cakes, biscuits, all different types of baked goods, sausage rolls, and everybody just sits down and chats. And these predominantly women that I go swimming with have like a whole life to tell you about, and some of their stories are fascinating. They are like burlesque dancers, they are lifelong like Harley Davidson bikers that have been all over the world, and they just tell you stories, but they're just so unassuming. You wouldn't think when you're sitting down next to them and they're like, you know, celebrating like their 80th birthday, you wouldn't think that they had these really adventurous, fulfilled lives. And then they start telling you all these stories, and then they start like using really foul language, and you're like, oh my gosh. But yeah, they're just the most wonderful group of people, and I feel very fulfilled in that part of my life. So I'm really grateful to have found that particular activity, and also to be part of a community that I was worried could be a bit culty, but I am hopeful that it's not. I don't want to say for sure that it's not, because you don't really know if you're in a cult until you come out of it, and then you're like, oh no. But I don't have to, I'm not mandated to do a certain amount of dips a week, and I don't have to pay to dip, and I don't get kicked out of the group if I don't show up for a couple of months. So, all of these things are green flags in my cult book.
Yes.
So I've been, just been dipping, really. Oh, actually, something to brag about. Let me just check my little app. Where are we? Oh, today marks day 16 in a row of going for a run. So I'm a runner. I
Ooh.
do running. Today
I
I've done
do.
my 16th run in a row. So yeah, I just wanted to brag about that, because it's hard to get out every day and do a run.
It is hard to get out every day. It's not probably not the best thing to do. You should do it every other day. But yeah, it's an achievement.
Well, I'm trying to get into a habit of it. So I thought I just have to keep running every day until my body says, "Hey, you should do a run today," and maybe then I'll take a day off. But
Oh, very good.
that's it. That's me running and dipping.
Yeah. Running into the sea, running back out the sea. That's what you
Oh yeah, so I did do that. I ran all the way from Leeso Bay up to the New Brighton Marine Lake, and then I just ran into the lake, and it was great.
to
So I had my swimmer costume on under my running stuff, and I got to the lake, and I took my running stuff off, and then I just got in the lake, and it was so good. It was, yeah, the most refreshing reward to have at the end of a hard run.
Very good. Very
Wow.
good. Okay, should we start this podcast then? I
You
think.
do you mean that's not the episode?
This is just the beginning bit where we just waffle for a bit and then we start the
Oh,
show.
jeez.
Do you not listen
Okay.
to
I think randomly.
it?
Listening to the one that was released today, and like there was like the whole 10 minutes, 15 minute discussion of Dave's shoulder. That was brilliant. I was like, when's the intro coming?
Yes, it was quite possibly the longest intro that we've ever done. So, although this is getting close. So I think Sean should take this one because it was his idea.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah, you open your mouth, that's what it is.
that's it.
Well, we didn't have an idea, so.
But it was a good idea, to be fair. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
All right. Welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I don't know what the introduction actually is, but I'm Sean in Canada, and with me are
Dan in the UK.
Tennessee in the UK.
Paul from the UK.
All right, that's fantastic. So what we're going to do today is talk about our favorite authors, maybe some of their books, and one book that represents, well, I guess all of their work or their style perhaps, or just your favorite book by that particular person. So, thought I'd start here. No real preamble. My first guy is Mitch Albom. Have you heard of him at all? Any of you?
No.
Oh, okay. He was born in May of 1958. He's an American author, journalist, and musician. As of 2021, he had over 40 million books sold, and he started out as a sports writer. So, his most famous book. It's Tuesdays with Maury, which I believe was published in 1995. And if I take a look at him here, basically what happened was he met his, no, he didn't meet, he had a sociology professor named Maury Schwartz, and he was on some kind of news program. And Mitch Albom saw him, and he's like, "That's my old professor. I should have kept in touch with him now that he's dying of ALS." So he got in touch with him, and every Tuesday he would go visit his old professor and chat with him and whatnot. And then he wrote a book called Tuesdays with Maury, and the sale of that book helped him pay for Maury's medical bills, which is how he I guess, atone for his guilt for not keeping in touch with his professor for all those years. So he's written about 10 or 12 books, and although Tuesdays with Morrie is his most famous or first one, the one I like the best is called The Five People You Meet in Heaven. And let me just pull that up here. Quick description is it follows the life and death of a ride mechanic named Eddie, who is killed in an amusement park accident and sent to heaven. There, he encounters five people who had a significant impact on him while he was alive. So that is a book, and pretty much all of his books you can read in an afternoon or a long evening. The Five People You Meet in Heaven, that is the one that I would recommend if you're going to search out this guy. And they're all very philosophical, very deeply introspective, and that kind of thing. And I think I've read all of his books except for the newest one that's come out that I haven't gotten yet. And they're fantastic. Mitch Albom, check them out. Dan, how
Very
about
good.
you do a book? Actually, I was going to actually say that Daniel Peter Hitch is my favorite author of
Of course,
the
yes.
Pirate the Bubble Pirate series, but I didn't want to shout
It
him out
goes
too
without
early.
saying,
It was,
it's just one of those things. Yeah,
it's a given.
that's
It's a
fine.
given. We
Wait,
yeah,
wait, wait,
exactly.
wait, 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 wait. Hang on. Dan, you're an author.
Did you not know
Yeah,
this?
yeah, oh, yeah. Well, you already knew this. You've bought all the books. It's okay. It's fine. We don't have to bring it up. It's fine. No, a children's author. I wrote a book many, many years ago, and it sold, I think, four copies. And that's about it, really. Bubbles the Pirate. It was a.
Being five, about to be five. I have kids. What's going on? I can't believe I did not know this. This
No,
is
it was
amazing.
basically these short little poems that I wrote for my middle child, who was pirate obsessed for years, from the year ages 2 to around about 7, and then he just became all history. Anything to do with history, he was obsessed with. But he was really into pirates, so I wrote little poems, and I would sort of say them to him to get him to sleep. And I thought, well, actually, no, this is kind of working. So I just wrote them down. Drew pictures for every two sentences, so it's all illustrated and everything like that. I don't even know where my copy's gone.
So
It's
cool.
buried somewhere.
I love pirates. I absolutely love, I mean, I
Ah.
know I've talked about Pirates of the Caribbean, and I probably talked about how I had a Pirates of the Caribbean bedroom, but we've been sorting stuff out for a car boot sale on the weekend, and I found this book. I'll just show you quickly. It's my Piratology.
Oh, wow. That's a
Oh,
big book.
and
Wow.
inside it's got like all these little interactive bits that you and like, you know, so it's like got
Oh,
flaps
look,
and
a
things, you
flap.
know. I loved flat, like
Ah.
these flap books I loved when I was a kid, but it's like for adults, you know, adults. And it's got like all these different little sensory bits inside, and it basically just outlines the lore of all the pirates.
Wow. That is
Yeah,
beautiful.
it's got stuff in here about what was his name? Barbossa in Pirates of the Caribbean is based on a real pirate, Barbarossa. So it's got all
Right.
stuff about Barbarossa in here.
Wow.
It's got stuff in here about the East India Trading Company. It's got loads of different things in here. So how spices were moved around, and yeah. Anyway, that reminds me of. I feel like the books that you've written are kids' books. Like this in my mind.
That would have been so funny if you turned a page and Bubbles the Pirate was actually in that book as one of the pirates.
Love pirates are great.
Yeah.
Pirates are so good.
When the kid got a little bit older, I was trying to write it as if, so the Bubbles the Pirate things, I don't know why I'm going on about this. They were basically for the little kids, and then I wanted to write a sort of YA teenager level version of it. So if you're reading it as a kid, it's one type of story. It's very, the kid who wants to be a pirate, but he can't really do it. He's not a natural pirate. And then I wanted to focus on his older brother, who's called Splash. And then I was going to build into the world. Why are they called Bubbles and Splash? These are really, silly names for old pirates. And it turns out they have to earn their proper pirate name when they become teenagers and stuff like this. And I was going to write the book. It's still all there. It's all the notes are. In fact, the keyboard for my PC is currently resting on about 3 inches of notes that I made for this book, but I
Oh
just never sat down and read it,
wow.
wrote it. Maybe someday I will. But
Oh
yes,
my
oh,
gosh.
thank you, Sean, for the shout out. There we go. Yeah.
Well,
If
hey,
you want to
yeah.
buy it and become my fifth person, then by all means, go to Amazon, Bubbles the Pirate. There we go. Yeah, and I suppose we should say that we've had many authors already on the show. Julia Huni, whose Vacuum of Space I finished last year, and I want to buy all the other books in her series because it is fantastic. As I was reading it, I could picture the movie rights. You know, if they made the movie of the book, who I would pick to put into the characters and stuff. Perfect. Mark Bowsher is also there with the Boy Who Stole Time and the Dream Peddler's Parade, which is the second book, which has just come out as well. So obviously they're all my favorite authors as well. But if I was going to pick one of the ones that everybody knows, it's Arthur C. Clarke would be my first pick on that one. And I'm going to cheat a little bit. There's no one book for him. It's four books in a series, well-known series, because the first one was turned into a very popular movie, 2001 Space Odyssey. Then you've got 2011, then you've got 2061, and then you've got 3001, which is the fourth book in the series, when we finally figure out what was happening in Jupiter. He's an English author. Everybody knows Arthur C. Clarke. It's one of those names. People tout him for all sorts of things. They misquote him a little bit and say, any sufficiently advanced civilization is indistinguishable from magic. It's a slight misquote. It is sort of, something that has come into the lexicon, the zeitgeist, whatever you want to call it in our way of talking. But Arthur C. Clarke, without him, the concept of satellites doesn't really come about. You know, he started it with the whole Telstar idea and so forth. But the 2001 series, genre defining science fiction, blah blah blah. Loads of people have said it far better than I ever could. But his way of writing, his singular narrative, being in the head of one character, so you're only seeing it through that one person's eyes. You don't really get a sense of what else is going on in the world. It's a very narrow vision, which leads to that kind of creepiness that comes into 2001. And you're seeing the world unfold on and these weird monoliths and what they're actually meaning from that character's perspective. I wish I could have maybe even a tenth of his writing abilities, but yeah, Arthur C. Clarke, that's what I'm recommending.
Good choice. He actually wrote one of my favorite short stories as well, so I'm right on board with you there.
Ooh. I haven't read Sentinel. That's the one he's always known for from the 1940s. I really want to get a copy of that.
Yes.
Very good. What was the short story that you read, Sean?
I don't remember what it was called, but basically all of humanity was gone, and some aliens had come to the planet, and there was a film canister in a rock pile, and so they built a machine to watch the thing, and they thought that's what humanity was. But at the end of the thing, it's a Walt Disney production, so it was just a cartoon. So that was the big reveal at the end. I can't remember what it was called, but it was fantastic.
No, that's another one for the list then.
There you go. Casey, do you have a favorite author?
Oh my gosh, should have left me till last.
Paul, do you have a
But
favorite author?
like, it's tricky. I have, depends on which year of my life we're talking about, I think, which is the same as all the things we've talked about, whether it's video games or movies or TV shows. It's hard for me to say like what my favorite book of all time ever is. Because different books have impacted me in different ways. The Hobbit is a book that I adore. It's a book that my mum read so much that the pages actually fell out of the spine. And every time she wanted to reread the book, she had to reorder the pages and then read the pages like as they were at individual pages. So I did read The Hobbit a lot growing up. So I feel like that's part of my childhood. I read The Handmaid's Tale in school as part of my GCSE curriculum. Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale. And I feel like when you're in school and you're like, forced, I'm going to say forced in air quotes because some people, obviously didn't do homework. But when you're forced to do assignments and read books with deadlines, I think that takes the fun out of it. But A Handmaid's Tale, like, moved me. I can't explain it. I don't know if it's because I am a woman. I don't know if it was, I don't know if it's like a feminist type of thing. I don't know, really. I don't know if any of you have read A Handmaid's Tale and had the same reaction, but it is incredibly powerful. It is dark and scary and it's dystopian, but also it's not too far-fetched, especially if you look at current events, which I'm not going to get into. I mean, I could, but I won't. So A Handmaid's Tale is definitely like, if The Hobbit was a book that was I was influenced to read by my family, A Handmaid's Tale was a book I was influenced to read by my education. My dad loves horror movies and my mum loves horror books. So when I read Stephen King's Misery and then when I watched Misery as a film, incredible. Like it was one of my first experiences of watching an adaptation of a book to film. And I think that kind of spoiled it for me because then I had this idea of what every book to film adaptation would be like, and that's definitely not the case. Kathy Bates is incredible. She's like an American treasure. So yeah, I think I kind of spoiled things for myself in that sense. But then my favorite Roald Dahl book, Fantastic Mr. Fox, turned into a Wes Anderson movie, is one of my favorite films, which I have talked about on this podcast before. It's so good. You've got Roald Dahl's humor with Wes Anderson's like cinematography style, and it's incredible. So I really liked that. I went through my young adult phase, my young adult teen reading phase, and I would like to say that I was part of the generation where books had never been like this before for young adults. I was like reading The Hunger Games. I was reading the Maze Runner. I was reading the Twilight Saga. I was reading all of these books that became huge, massive film franchises. And I was just absolutely loving every single series that was put out. I don't know if they've all aged very well, and I'm embarrassed by some of them now and how much I was a fan of them. I loved the Twilight Saga. I loved Stephenie Meyer as the author, who then wrote a book called The Host, which was also made into a film. And it's about aliens slowly taking over planets and trying to make them better. So, like, imagine Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but like a young adult romance kind of film. Like that's what the book was like. It was bizarre. But I love The Host. But as an adult, and being a bit more mature and older, there's an author called Gillian Flynn who has written several psychological thrillers that are all kind of set in the Midwest of America, and that's where Gillian Flynn is from. They are incredible books. One is called Sharp Objects, one is called Dark Places, and one is called Gone Girl. So Gone Girl is probably the one that is most familiar to people because that was turned into a very successful film. Gillian Flynn just has this way of like describing the Midwest of America as though you're actually like hearing it and tasting it and like feeling it, even though you've never been. It's the most bizarre thing. So I would say that Gone Girl probably defines Gillian Flynn as an author in terms of books that she's produced. But every now and then I go online and I search to see if she has any books that are due to be released, and she just kind of went under the radar a little bit. So I'm always hopeful that she'll release more books. And lastly, my childhood was very influenced by Harry Potter, which is a sad subject to talk about. Sometimes people say you need to separate the art from the artist, but at some point I think you need to decide on, if you've got family members that are politically and socially, culturally aligned one way and J.K. Rowling is somewhere else. I think that's hard. I absolutely loved the Harry Potter books. Read them all several times. And then started reading this like whodunit series by this like Cormoran this Cormoran Strike series by an author called Robert Galbraith. And I was like, oh my gosh, this book is incredible. It's called The Cuckoo's Calling, and it was the first book. I didn't know if there were going to be any more. And then later on, J.K. Rowling came out and was like, oh yeah, that's me. So she'd been writing these incredible books under a pseudonym because the first time she tried to do like a murder mystery type of book, it completely flopped, and everyone was like, she should just stick to fantasy writing and mystery writing. The Strike novels are absolutely my all-time favorite books of all time. If I had to choose a like a group of books to take with me to a desert island, it would be those books. The only thing is that I won't buy them. So la the last book that she released in this series, Lee bought it for me because he knew I would really want to read it, but I wouldn't pay for it for myself. Usually what I do is I wait for them to end up in a charity shop, like a thrift shop, a Goodwill store, and then I'll buy it from there because I don't feel comfortable at the moment. Having friends that identify as trans, I don't feel like I would be an ally to them if I was putting money in J.K. Rowling's pocket, even if it was only a few pennies. So that's my silent protest.
Well,
But yeah, Robert Galbraith, the books are phenomenal. It's hard. I feel like I'm torn in two different places.
you know what else won't put money in J.K. Rowling's pocket? This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network. Since we
And
only have
do you
30
know what?
seconds
Do you know
left.
what else will help not put money into J.K. Rowling's pockets? Is this promo for another book, Bubbles the Pirate? Bubbles the Pirate by Daniel Peter Hitch. Bubbles lives in a pirate world, but struggles to fit in. He's not mean and scary like everyone else. He wants to be like his fearsome pa, but doesn't think he has what it takes. Will Bubbles learn to be a buccaneer? You can find out for $1.99 on Amazon or other good bookshops.
Awesome.
For over 200 episodes, the 42cast has brought you interviews, topics, and reviews that are unequaled anywhere on the internet. And that's not going to change. That's right, if you want to listen to a bunch of geeks talk about a random geeky topic and have a lot of fun doing so, then the 42cast is the show for you. It's your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. You can only find all this awesome as part of the ESO Network.
It's still available.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's still on there. No one's buying it, but it's still on there.
I'm surprised Amazon haven't given it away free just to get rid of it.
Just to get it, yeah, just get it gone.
We need space in the warehouse.
What they should do is like, because they say that you have to sell 500 copies before you get a set of them like free, but also they become paperback. Then you actually have a set that gets sent to you, and then you can sell them on at conventions or whatever if you want to exhibit. But they should just have under that line of like you must sell 500 copies with just like a tee hee hee hee, you think you're going to sell 500 copies.
You see, you could have done conventions. You could have come up to Liverpool Comic Con.
I would love, if that were my job, I would absolutely love it. Unfortunately, people need to
Imagine.
actually buy the book.
Wouldn't that be so great to just, I mean, that when I do Crime Con in next month in June, that's basically I just go there with my podcast and I'm there in a stall and I just talk to people about my podcast. And I wish that I could like sell merchandise and stuff and just that be the artists that you see at Comic Con when they're just sitting there drawing and you can see them doing their work in real time. That's amazing. You can't really record stuff at background call because it's so loud and busy. But yeah, it's always been a dream of mine to just be able to create things and sell them to people and be like, here, take this and have it in your home. I'm shit at art though, so even
Well,
your drawings here in your book look so good, Dan. I couldn't draw a face
oh,
like that.
thank
No, it's
that
I
is
mean
the low effort drawing that I've put into that.
now
Paul,
the
like the gold earring.
do you have a favorite author, Paul?
I do. I'm just looking at Dan's book. Give over, Dan. Did you draw that?
What's that?
Did you actually draw that?
Yeah,
The elephant in the water and the
the
holy cow. That's amazing.
I'm sure you'll
Yeah,
sell 500 copies after this podcast comes out.
Oh yeah,
Oh
absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if yes,
This
if our listener buys the 500 copies, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 500, I'll ship them out, it'd be fine.
So books, yes. So favorite author. So I have like a top three, which was it was fairly straightforward to pick the top three, but I should really have had Isaac Asimov in here, but I read his books again like a few years ago. Read like 20 in 1 year just to to go through the series of books that he had, and they were good, but getting a little bit sort of dated now. Although the actual stories are still very good and very appropriate. And I could quite easily say Sir Arthur Conan Doyle because I like Sherlock Holmes, but he's written a lot of Sherlock Holmes stuff, but I haven't read anything else of his. But so more so I had to go with what I've been reading more recently, more recently in sort of 10, 15 years ago maybe. Tom Clancy I was a big fan of his work. I've tried to read his again. I read a book of his. It's so long and so slow. I found it hard to read. However, I have fallen back on one of my favorite authors here, and that is James Dover Grant. Have you ever heard of James Dover Grant? No?
No,
No.
not.
Oh,
Nope.
he's had films made of his books. He's had TV series made of his books. You've never heard of him? Oh, okay. So James Dover Grant, CBE, born in October 1954, primarily known by his pen name Lee Child.
Yes, of course. I almost had him on my list, but all of his books are the exact same, only different.
Exactly.
But
Yes.
I've read them all and I love them. So yes,
Yes, that's right. I mean,
all.
I am a big fan of his work. Of course, we're talking about Jack Reacher. Just the idea of somebody walking around, walking into town, cleaning up the town, moving on. That's my style. That's my genre. I love that style of things. The Incredible Hulk TV series many years ago was that. What's the one with the guy who's supposed to be an angel and he's walking through town by town?
Highway to Heaven
That's the one. Highway to Heaven.
with Michael Landon. And we had a show over here in Canada called The Littlest Hobo where it was a dog that did the same thing.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I remember that. So yeah, so that sort of style I like, and it's so easy to read, get into. You understand the character. I think the character has changed a lot since the TV series has started, because I think he's now writing to that character rather than writing to that actor, rather than the actor acting out what was on the page. I think the best book really that defines his work, if I was to say to somebody, hey, you need to read this book and you'll get Jack Reacher, you will understand him, you'll understand what all of the books from now on are going to be about. The early books are a bit more sort of about his history, about what there's been so he's written backstories as well, so more about when he was in the army. He was an MP in the army, a very good one. He's then retired from the army, or been retired out of the army. He has a pension, so he can go around various places. But the one that is the best one is The Killing Floor, which was made into the first season of Reacher on I think it's on Amazon, isn't it?
It is.
So and that story defines pretty much his character. Walks in, gets accused of murder. He's only literally just walked in and sat down and is eating a piece of apple pie, and already the cops are arresting him for murder. There's twists and turns. He obviously doesn't make too many friends, but there are people who understand him to a degree. And fortunately, the one of the police, or the, sorry, two of the police understand him and follow him, and he uncovers this big plot, and there's lots of gunfire and explosions at the end of it. And that's pretty much every book after that. Goes into town, cleans it up, blah blah blah. He does pop over to the UK at one point. There's a book about him going around the UK, around London. I wish he'd come back and do another one. But there are, at the present time of recording, and as far as I can see so far, there are 30 books in the Reacher series, plus 16 short stories, or yes, short stories or books with short stories in them. So a huge catalogue of work, but I absolutely love it. It's great. It's an easy read. You can get through them fairly quick, and rather annoyingly, Kindle. Because I read a lot of physical books. I bought a Kindle many years ago, and I've loved the Kindle because it's easy to read of a night time. I can do it without disturbing my wife, and it's really good. So I've downloaded loads of books. I've read from the Kindle loads of times. I then went through the year of reading physical books, came back to the Kindle, and rather annoyingly, they'd put on these little goals that you can get. So if you read for like a full week, you have achieved a weekly a goal. Well done, congratulations. If you read continuously for a month, every day for a month, you get another one saying, "Well done, you've done it for a month." And they give you a season to do it in. So like you do it in spring, obviously summer, winter, autumn, and then at the end of that 3 month period, they say, "Yes, well done, you've done 3 months constant reading." And so many days in a row. And when I looked at my original reading pattern, it said I had done 23 days in a row. And how many months was it? It was, sorry, 23 days in a row, 9 months in a row. And then I'd stopped. So I thought, right, that's what I need to beat. So quite easily, I got past the 23 days. I am now up to 360
Oh no.
something
Wow.
days. Let me just get my Kindle records up. Not that I'm anal about this at all, but I do have a spreadsheet, of course.
Of course.
330 days, 330 days in a row. And I want to get to the 360. Now,
Wow.
ironically, I have done 56 weeks in a row. And that's because at the beginning, when I started it in 2024, it was around about 1st of April. So we've just come up for for 12 months. I read for I started reading halfway through April. Then I got into May, and I started reading May, and I skipped I missed 2 days. So because I missed 2 days, all my streak went. So we started again.
No.
Oh no.
So
That's
although I've read three 56 weeks in a row, obviously one of those or two of those weeks I'd missed 2 days. So the next month I missed 1 day. So I was
this oh.
2 months where I missed 3 days. So then we started properly and we kept going and we kept going, and now I'm up to 330 days in a row. So in the middle of June I should be 365. That's what I want to get to, a full year every day. And 56 weeks in a row, obviously, I've beaten the 52 weeks that I would have, needed for the year. So I'm quite happy. And oh my goodness, how many books have I read? I can't even begin to add them up. I've read loads and loads of books now. And annoyingly, I've got lots and lots of books for my birthday, and they're all physical copies. So how do I read a physical copy? And so what you have to do, you have to every day read at least 2 pages of a Kindle book. And then you carry on with your normal paper book, and that keeps your streak going. It's taken me a long time to read this book. I'm only halfway through a
That's
book.
so frustrating.
Two
Like
pages have
I
gone.
realize that this is Kindle's marketing strategy, but just to kind of plug a different app. When I go running, I used to do Couch to 5K, but I don't know if anyone's tried that, and it's not very friendly, I would say. I tried Couch to 5K. I think it's like over 12 weeks, and maybe you set up your own plan, or you put in your capabilities, and then it generates you a plan and tells you that it's going to take you 12 weeks on this kind of schedule to get to 5K. But it doesn't really tell you anything about what you're doing when you're running in terms of like your breathing, your posture, and any of that stuff. And I think I was like 7 or 8 weeks in when I just slowed down a t because every run was a massive struggle. And I think I just slowed down a tiny bit one run, and then I could just keep running and going and going and going. And it finally clicked to me. And I was like, wow, I could have done this in week one if the app would have guided me a little bit more. So then I switched to this thing called the Nike Run Club, and it's like guided running with coaches. So the coaches are like, hey, let's do a systems check and check on your breathing. And, how do your shoes feel? How do your trainers feel? Like, how does your body feel? Is your face screwed up? Because this is all, anyway, my point is, with this app is that I'm on a streak, but if I don't use the app to do a run, say I can't have my phone, say I do a run on a treadmill indoors and I don't want to have my phone on my body. When I'm outside, I have a little thing on my arm that I put my phone into, and that's what I run with. But say I'm running indoors on a treadmill, you can upload that into the app. And it will still count as your streak. So you should be able to, in your Kindle app, you should be able to say, hey, I read 5 pages of a physical book today, and it should still count towards your streak. I know that Kindle's like, hey, I want you to keep coming back and buying books on the Kindle store and putting money into your Kindle app. But that's frustrating to me because it should still allow you to keep your streak if you're reading physically or not physically. And there is a way to do it because if I manually input my run into the Nike Run Club app, it will still count towards my streak, and you should be allowed to do that. But my whole long story is just to tell you that what's happening to you, Paul, isn't fair.
So yeah, I mean it's eaten into me every day. I'm going, oh, I haven't, and I panicked at one time because we went on holiday, and of course we went to Canada and crossed a few time zones. I thought,
Oh boy.
oh, I was on the plane when I actually was reading because I had it in airplane mode, and when I landed, I was in a different time zone. I didn't know whether it had added it up, counted it, and it for 2 days it kept saying your streak is zero, and then it caught up. It does actually record when you read, but then has to get some Wi-Fi to download that to the cloud, and then your streak comes back. So I've got a little bit smarter with that now. I'm gonna have to make sure that I read at the correct times and
Oh my gosh, Paul, your life is being dictated by the Kindle app. That's
I,
so much stress.
but you say that, however, it's reading and I enjoy reading,
Yeah,
so
that's true. That's
it's great.
true.
It's really good. So it forces me to read, which it I don't have to. And the idea is that I read every night time before I go to bed, and that's what I always used to do when I was younger, and it always makes me tired and helps me get to sleep. So that's that's really the only time I really do it. Although more recently I have been reading during sort of Sunday, Saturdays or Sundays if there's a bit of downtime there. So yeah, it's been fun. So Sean, have you got any other authors that you enjoy?
I do. Have you heard of Matthew Riley?
No.
All right. Well, he's an Australian born in Sydney in July of 1974, and he writes action adventure books. He's got two series, the Shane Schofield novels. He's got several standalone novels, and then he's got the Jack West Jr. novels. And these are fantastic. I just started reading them all of a sudden randomly, and I'm not sure if I read the books in order, but in the Jack West books, the first one was The Seven Ancient Wonders, and then the next one was The Six Sacred Stones, and then The Five Greatest Warriors, and it counts down. And I haven't got to The One Impossible Labyrinth yet to complete the series because I haven't found that book yet. But he's pretty good.
He hasn't really
He
thought that through, though,
wrote.
has he? Because, I mean, he's put himself on a deadline there. He can't write any more books after the first one, so to speak. He should have done it the other way
Well,
around, and then he could
that's
just
it.
keep going.
No, but I feel like
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
that. I feel like the five something something, and then the four something something, and you're like, oh, okay, see now what to expect from this series. And as a reader that is interested in that, I think it's nice to know what what to expect. Sometimes when people decide to turn things into, like a, oh, there's going to be a sequel, or it's going to be a trilogy, or it's going to be an ongoing series, and then you don't know if the next book is going to be the last book, and you've put like 8 years of your life into like reading these books and waiting for these books and re like Googling for updates. So I kind of like that, Sean. I like the idea of knowing where I stand when it comes to a particular book series.
There you
I mean,
go. There you
until he
go.
sets one in like the Arctic, and it's like the -6 degrees book, and then like it gets colder and colder as it goes on.
Well, actually, he's got some Arctic books in the Shane Schofield series of novels, not the Jack West Jr. series of novels. So
There we
he
go.
does do the Arctic stuff, and his characters are usually military men. They're badasses, and they're always taking all kinds of beatings. He wrote and directed Interceptor for Netflix. That was a pretty good action adventure movie. But if you want to read something by him that's totally different but highlights his writing style, it's called The Tournament, and it's set in 1546 in the Ottoman Empire, and Queen Elizabeth is the main character, and it's about a chess tournament, and there's also murder involved. So there's that. Totally different
Sounds
from his military stuff, but
worth a go.
fascinating. So
that's Matthew Riley, and he's Australian. I got one more, but I'm going to hear from Dan first. What's his next author?
Casey's already mentioned Roald Dahl. If it was based on how many books of the author, Roald Dahl throughout everything, and yes, Fantastic Mr. Fox, all of the books. Where there was a bundle that I had as a child where it was everything all in one. They were all orange backed, and they all had like a logo on them that would match the character, and they were just this beautiful set of books. I think my sister's now got it. I need it back. The Fantastic Mr. Fox, but also both of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory books would be the
Ooh.
ones. It's this, and I actually prefer the sequel. I prefer the Glass Elevator to the Chocolate Factory.
I do like the Chocolate Factory books, but if it's not Fantastic Mr. Fox, it's The Twits. I
Oh,
absolutely
yeah.
loved that book as a child. I could like smell the grimy old Mr. Twit with food in his beard, and they were playing pranks on each other as cantankerous old people, and I was like, they are those neighbors across the street that you never want your ball to land in their garden as a child when you're like playing Kirby, because you know that they're dodgy. You don't quite know what's up with them, but you know there's something up with them. That's what The Twits always reminded me of. I absolutely loved that book as a child, but The Glass
Yeah,
Elevator is great. Roald Dahl, just so good.
it's the one that gets you into, I think, reading, and on a larger scale. Like, you can be introduced to books as you grow up and things like that. I used to love the Choose Your Adventure books and things. That's what really got me started and going
Yes.
through there. But Roald Dahl, to know that there was a whole pantheon of books that you could get stuck into. They weren't necessarily connected, although there was always these theories that they were. So Roald Dahl was in there. Again, mirroring what Casey was saying, there is now a troublesome author, someone who I've read books for. I was bought three of the books for a Christmas 2 years ago, and now it turns out he's not so nice.
Is
Mr.
it is
Neil
it a,
Gaiman.
oh, him. I thought you were going to say Orson Scott Card, but yeah, I knew
Yeah,
that name.
it's really difficult knowing that, I want to read these books. I wanted to read the Anansi Boys, and I wanted to read the American Gods. And now I'm thinking, do I really want to? And these three books are just sitting on my shelf, staring at me like I should read them. I'm it is that, long question of how do you separate the book from the author, and sit down and rationalize it. They were bought for me, so I'm going to use Casey's out, I think, on this one. So I didn't contribute, somebody else did. So that's what I'm going with on that. So yeah, there's Neil Gaiman, and again, I've read so many of the books, and going through all of that, and being a Neverwhere was just a wonderful series about this parallel alternate London underneath London.
Oh
Oh,
my
loved it.
gosh, Neverwhere is so good.
I just wanted to read it, but the other one I have mentioned in lots of different episodes, including our time travel one, and of course I did the book review for, which was Time Machine and The War of the Worlds from H.G. Wells.
You know, one of the granddaddies of science fiction. Obviously, not the granddaddy. We all know that Frankenstein came first with Mary Shelley, but you know, she came first, and then H.G. Wells continued the journey with this wonderful tale of science fiction, and time travel was the one that got me in, and then War of the Worlds got me further through. And I have read some of his other short stories, like the Land Ironclads, where he talks about these weird things, these metallic boxes on wheels that could go through war zones. It's like, what could these be? You know, and only 20 years later, the tank was invented. So you know, these wonderful science fiction stories that now look dated because obviously we've moved way beyond what he predicted. So those are my fiction authors, but I have quite a few authors that I'll probably come up to later, which are non-fiction, which I really, really do enjoy. But has anyone else got any more fiction authors?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I've got my second favorite author at the moment, which is a relatively new writer, although I should say a relatively new writer of books. His name is Simon McLeave, and the reason I found him is because on Facebook one day, as is your wont, you know, adverts pop up and they say, you know, here's something you might like. And it was a book called The Wirral Killings. And that is based around where I live. So I thought, oh, and I saw it on Amazon. So I opened up the preview that you can read, and I read the preview, and it was all set around where I live. And I thought, this is amazing. I know all of these places. I know, you know, this is great. I'll buy this, but I've never heard of Simon McLeave before. Let me just see if he's written anything else, only to find out that this was number 20 in the amount of books that he has written. All based on, at the time, it was D.I. Ruth Hunter, so Detective Inspector Ruth Hunter. And she is a female detective, obviously, from London, growing up around Peckham, around that sort of area, which is a bit of a rough area. And there's, you know, she's obviously, you know, at the beginning of the book, the beginning of the first book, I should say, she starts out picking out this drug gang and, you know, trying to, you know, stop them from selling the drugs. Realizes that, you know, these are young kids and she's had enough of this, you know, London lark. She's 51. She's getting on a bit now, you know, getting near, I suppose, near retirement, really, for a police officer. So she decides to move to North Wales, and she moves into a small little town in North Wales, which before she's even got there has had a murder. So she turns up and she's thrown straight away. She's as the you know, highest ranking police officer there. She is now ha you know, has to look into this murder, and it's based around the area of Snowdonia. So Wales's highest mountain is well, if I could remember the Welsh name for it, I would. But it's we call it Snowdon, and the Snowdonia Park is a national park around the North Wales mountains. So it's all based around that area. And the reason it's all based around that area is because Simon McLeave was a screenwriter, and he actually wrote four, if I can pick out his thing, is a multi-million selling crime novelist who lives in North Wales with his wife and two children. He himself used to live in London and has moved up to North Wales, and now is writing books about this detective inspector who's now moved up to North Wales. Before he was an author, Simon worked as a script editor for the BBC and a producer at Channel 4 before working on as a story analyst in Los Angeles. He then became a script writer, writing on series such as Silent Witness, The Bill, EastEnders, and many more. He had a film that came out, and a TV series that was based on his work. And The Snowdonia Killings was released in January 2020. So in 4 years, 5 years, he has written 20 books based on this one character. But better than that, has branched out to another ex-policeman who's in his 70s, called Frank Marshall. And his first book, The Marshal of Snowdonia, is was a really good book. I would love to see him bring these two characters together. Maybe Ruth Hunter could go and, you know, ask him a few questions about something that's going on or whatever, or even look into one of his crimes that he may have committed as an ex-policeman. He's still not a, you know, thinks he's got his own law, you know what I mean? He's an old copper, so we know he can do certain things. So there's four books in that series. The D.I. Ruth Hunter then had they brought, if you sign up to Simon McLeave's website. He gives you two short stories based on like prequels to D.I. Ruth Hunter, which I've read one, but I've yet to read another. And then there's four when she was a detective, sorry, a detective constable at DC, before she was promoted to a detective inspector. And they are based a few years before and give a lot of backstory as well. Really good books. I love them. I've read the first two, which have been the Snowdonia Killings and the Harlech Beach Killings. I then have the Dee Valley, the Devil's Cliff, the Berwyn River, White Forest, Solis Farm, Menai Bridge. You know, all of these places are areas in North Wales. So he's based each murder and the whole book is based around a certain area in North Wales. And having been around North Wales quite a lot as a young kid, because we used to go to for holidays there. I wouldn't say I know the area that well, but I know the area well enough to to get the feeling for it. And the I don't know what they're going to call it, but the Snowdonia Killings has been made or is being made as we speak into a TV show. Whether they're going to base a series on one book or whether they do one book every episode, I don't know. But they are filming it at the moment, so later this year, earlier next year. It should come out as a TV series as well.
Exciting.
Do you have another author, Sean, or do
I do. It's Robert J. Sawyer. You may have heard me talk about him before, especially since I interviewed him on the Rusted Robot podcast back in 2014, and I got to meet him at Dragon Con in 2019. He was
Nice.
born April of 1960 in Ottawa, Canada, and he's won the Nebula Award, the Hugo Award, the John W. Campbell Memorial Award, the Robert A. Heinlein Award, and he's won more, I can't say it, Aurora Awards than anybody else in history. He's a science fiction writer. His themes include science and religion, mind uploading and human consciousness, SETI and immortality. He's written 25 novels, including three trilogies. I don't know how I discovered him. I think I was actually down in the Toronto area, and I saw a book in a bookstore called Flash Forward, and it was, I guess he'd been there the previous week, and it was an autographed copy. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I wanted to pick this book up for a while. I'll pick up the autographed copy. And I read it, and I was hooked immediately. And I don't know. He just writes really good stuff. And if you're looking for something to read by him, read the Neanderthal Parallax. It's a trilogy, hominids, humans, and hybrids. And in the first one, there's Neanderthals, and they're in our timeline, but they're in a parallel universe. And then there's an experiment in the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory thing, and the two worlds connect. So the first one is about the hominids' lifestyle, and then the humans' lifestyle, and they have babies. And Hybrids is the third book. So I read them 20 years ago. They're fantastic. He's as a writer, he's fantastic. As a person, he talks about himself quite a bit. He's pretty high on himself, but whatever, that's fine. His books are good.
I suppose if you meet him in a Comic Con or somewhere like that, and you're going to interview him, well, naturally he's going to talk about himself. That's what you want him to do.
Yeah, but the way he does it is a little bit off-putting. That's fine. It's all good. So those are my three. I had who did I have? I had Mitch Albom, Matthew Riley, and Robert Sawyer. I could have had Lee Child. I could have had Clive Cussler on there. Lee Child, Clive Cussler, they write about the same guy, and all the books are pretty much the same but different, just like Paul said. But that's basically it. You guys have any more favorite authors?
I have an author called Michael Joseph Connolly, who's well known for his series of Bosch novels, Hieronymus Harry Bosch, also Mickey Heller, the Lincoln Lawyer,
I love
amongst other
both of
things.
those series are so good. I haven't
They're
read the books,
amazing.
but both series are so good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, The Lincoln Lawyer. I
Oh.
love the film, and the series is just so much better than the film as well.
Absolutely. The series is amazing, and I can't remember the actor's name now, but he is absolutely nailed the performance there for that, and the stories
Very
are so
good.
good. And Bosch, I think, is amazing. I love Bosch. But the books that he has written are amazing because he's written 40 of the Bosch books. Well, no, sorry, I beg your pardon. He's written 40 books, and he starts off writing, the Harry Bosch novels. He then brought in the Lincoln Lawyer. And then later on, he brought in a character called Renee Ballard, who is a police officer, and he's based this on a real woman that he has used as a consultant for all of his books with Harry Bosch. So he gets all of the police procedural bit correct. And then he wrote, I think Jack McAvoy is a journalist, from what I remember, and so he's written 4 books of that. And Terry McCaleb, who is an FBI agent. Then what he does is what I absolutely adore. He brings them all together in various books. So you will get a mixture of Terry McCaleb and Bosch. And then a bit later on, you get Lincoln Lawyer comes in on one of them, helps him out. And that is also amazingly in the TV series. He uses Bosch. He meets up with Bosch. I'm sure it is in one of the TV series. You get Renny Ballard helping him out on some of the stories as well. So it's just incredible to bring those characters across. I love that. I love it when authors do that. I would love it even better if different authors would do that and borrow each other's characters and put them into their own books and have cross series that way. And if I was ever going to write a series or write a book, I would love to do that. I'd love to have somebody else writing a character. Maybe they start off in the same book, or maybe they just meet up in various books as the stories go along. I'd love something like that, to have that interwoven story and characters. So a series of 40 books, some of which I've read. I can't remember. It's been a while since I read a Harry Bosch book. I can't remember what I'm up to, and I can't remember whether I read The Lincoln Lawyer or not. So even though I have ticked it to say I have read it. So I need to go back, and you need to go back and start again from the beginning of the Harry Bosch series and work my way through all 40 books. It is a plan. It is on my list of things to do. At the moment, what I tend to do is because I if I started reading a book series like that, I would get bored of it quite quickly. Same old, same old, same thing. Too much the same. So what I've started doing is reading, books. So for example, at the moment I'm reading Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency because I was in
Oh,
between
yes.
series, which is the most bizarre book I've ever written, and it's taken me
It
so long to read. The TV series was much better and totally different. That's the American series, not the British series. I haven't seen that yet. Then I'll go to a Jack Reacher novel, then I'll go to a Simon McLeave novel, then I'll go to Michael Connelly. Start the Black Echo and start again right from the beginning. Then I'll go back to Simon McLeave, then I'll go over to Lee Child. It also depends on which is the cheapest book in Amazon at the time when I go to buy it, because this is going to cost a fortune. Even Kindle Unlimited is probably not the way to go. But it's just so many books, and I'm so glad because I've made a pact with the devil that I said, look, until I finish reading all my books, you can't take me. So I just keep buying more books.
like it.
You just need to say that you want to read all of the published works of L. Ron Hubbard, who I believe to this very day holds like the Guinness World Record for like most published books
Wow.
of all time. You know, just the leader of Scientology, you know, casually. Get yourself a copy of Dianetics and work up from there, Paul. Before you know it, you'll
What
be
could go
reaching all
wrong?
sorts of you'll be reaching all sorts of ascension levels that you didn't even know were humanly possible.
Many books has he written? What was his name?
L. Ron Hubbard.
This could work out really hard on the old, there we go, search history. Are we 74? Every one of these authors are in the 60s or 70s.
Been dead for
Yeah,
years.
he said in 1948, he said at a science fiction convention, because he was like a oh, what's that type of science fiction writer? There's a Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction. He was a Pulp Fiction writer.
Okay.
And he is like one of his most famous quotes was, "Writing for a penny a word is ridiculous. If a man really wants to make $1 million, the best way would be to start his own religion."
Turns out he was right.
Oh,
It's
okay.
true.
So Hubbard produced more than 250 published works of fiction in his writing career. That's close to Isaac Asimov, because but Isaac Asimov wrote
And
on postcards
the
and
wild
all sorts.
thing about L. Ron Hubbard's work is that he put so much emphasis on understanding the like the etymology of every single word, but his etymology of that word, not the actual etymology of the word, like where it came from, how it changed over time. Like even the word cult, if you look at that through the ages, has different associations, connotations, and definitions. So in Scientology, they spend hundreds and hundreds of hours understanding L. Ron Hubbard's definition and etymology of a word and using that in the way that it should be used under Hubbard's instructions. So if that's not an example of indoctrination, then I don't know what is.
Yeah, but yeah, he's in the Guinness Book of Records for the most books written, 1,084.
Yeah. So let's not go near
Although,
L. Ron Hubbard. That was an absolute joke. If we're talking about authors to avoid, who's one of them?
I wish they give you like a top 10. That's no good, is it? Because that sounds good, but is he beating somebody by like one?
Well, the thing is, he was like a failed science fiction writer in the grand scheme of things. He wasn't particularly successful, but then he writes a religion based on his science fiction, and it becomes one of the most popular new religious movements
Okay,
in our history,
what you're
which is
saying is I've
wild.
got hope. Yeah. Okay.
Pirate
That's it.
cult
Yeah,
based
pirate cult.
on like.
Well, that's bizarre. I mean, okay, so this is going to need a bit more digging into, but that we haven't got the time for at the minute. But yeah, 1,084. Then it says Maria del Lopez, whatever, is also another prolific writer, writing over 4,000 novels. How is that a thing then? So anyway, thank you, Internet. Go away.
But imagine your streak if you read them all, Paul.
Oh,
That would never end.
You'd live to 604 years old.
So just before we carry on, in our previous podcast, we were talking about retro gaming and games and things. For my birthday, I got one of these.
Ooh.
It's a Steam Deck.
Nice. That
I can
is.
na I can now play all my games from my PC on a handheld device.
But how are you having time to play that and keep your streak going? That's
I tell
mind-boggling.
you,
You're gonna
I
have to
tell you.
read and play.
I read before I go to bed. I read whilst I'm eating my dinner. I read a quick couple of pages on the Kindle, and the rest of the time
The
is.
way forward is I've got a text to speech app called Speechify, and it reads me everything. So I'll be making packed lunches or folding the washing, and I'm listening to, because I have to, I say have to, I go to book club once a month, and book club that I go to is non-fiction books about cult related stuff. So it's like really heavy reading about like recovery and healing, and like how people get into cults, how people get out of cults, just everything to do with that kind of psychological heavy stuff. And so I have to multitask. I can't read that stuff before bed. So I'm usually doing it like on a run, or if I'm driving somewhere on my own, I won't listen to that stuff with the kids around. But that's another thing. I don't have the time, so I have to multitask when it comes to my reading, which takes the fun out of it a lot. It becomes one of my chores. I've got, oh, this washing to fold and all of this washing to do and this dishwasher to empty, and I'm going to do that while I'm reading this book.
I struggle with that because Yeah, I tried.
Snoop Dogg reads to me.
That's an interesting style. But no, I did try an audio book a while back, and I was listening to it in the car driving to work, and that's like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, a snippet, if you like. I find it hard to follow because it just seems to take so long, and I was forgetting what had happened previously, and it was, and if and whoever does the voice work, really needs to be able to do voices differently, and some of them are just bizarre and weird. It didn't really. It was like me, talking to my kids doing the bedtime stories. I mean, I'm not that good at voices, but so it just didn't feel right. This one person. If it was an audio drama where you've got different characters and different people, I could understand who was supposed to be which. So I could get that then. But this, it was when it's one person doing all the voices, I couldn't get into it. So no.
You need Lee to read your book. When he's reading to the kids, it's the funniest thing. He has different voices for every character, and he gets really into them as well, which is funny because he's usually quite quiet, reserved. But then last week he's like, "Who's trip-trapping over my bridge?" It was really getting into it. It was so good.
He's in tomorrow. I'll have a word with him about that. So, hey, read this book with you.
Just follow me around work and
Yeah.
read this Kindle book to me.
Here's a quick question for you, though, Casey. Just as a sideball, while we're talking about Lee, how did he find the exam? But Lee and I were both on a course for wine tasting. It's part of our job, apparently.
Oh
And
yeah, oh yeah, part of the job.
oh
Yeah,
yeah, it's, I was forced to go on it by my boss.
Oh no, terrible.
But it's a proper exam. It was a recognized, fully recognized national
Yeah.
exam. So 50 question, 50 multiple qu qu yeah, 50. I can't even speak now. Oh, here's a cat.
How much wine did you drink? So
He, yeah. So it
he
was
brought some
50
home with him,
multiple
yeah.
choice. I did. We were allowed to, not allowed, but Sue said, if I just look away and some of the bottles go missing, it'll save me carrying them home. So we did bring some of them home. But yeah, so anyway, the trouble is we were tasting it and spitting it out. I mean, that's not the way to drink wine. But then this flipping exam at the end of it, my goodness, it was hard.
Yeah. Well, Lee brought some home and I was there and I was like, trying to carry on with the household jobs, and he's following me around with a glass and a bottle and he's like, "Here, this is how you drink it. Try this, do it like this, sip it like this, smell it like this, swish it around the glass. Can you see a golden halo around the edge of the?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, have you been on wine training? Have you been on wine training, have you? Because oh my gosh." But hopefully all of that stuff helped to reinforce his
Yeah.
knowledge
Well,
gained from that day for the quiz at the end of it. But yeah,
yeah.
he also did bring some wine home. I was like, "Should you be driving home?" And he was like, "Oh, well, I was spitting the wine out mostly."
Yes, mostly, yeah. Until we got to the port. Oh dear, oh dear. But no, I mean, it was a good course, and the wines were like, they were not cheap. No, most of them were not cheap. There were some that were sort of a decent price, but there was very little under £15. I think the highest one was £52 a bottle, that we tried. But it wasn't just that. I mean, all of that side, it was great. I mean, we've both learned a lot about wines and about what to look for in wines and how, if it's a bad wine, how to find out. But also, where they're from, how the climate affects things. And then it suddenly became a geography quiz, because it was like, if this vineyard, I mean, there's thousands of vineyards in the world. If this vineyard is based in the 50 degrees north, what sort of wines would you expect to find from it? Would they be high in
This
sugar,
many
low in
miles from a
God.
lake.
Yes, that's right. Is it next to a river? And what effect would that have on it? No,
That's so
that's
funny.
geography.
Lee came home and laughed at the fact that everybody in the training was like, "Yeah, hi, my name's so and so. I've been here for 18 years. Yeah, my name's so and so. I've been here for 15 years." Lee was like, "Yeah, I've been here for 13 years." And then there was one guy on the end who was like, "Hey, my name's so and so. I've been here for 6 months."
Yes. And we went, oh boy, you've been thrown in the deep end. What do you know about wines? Nothing. Oh God.
Oh,
But
that's so funny.
Richie from the lab, he's been there a while, a few years, and he went through the course. We drank all the tested all the wines and all that, and they said, right, okay, so you're not allowed to leave the exam for the first 15 minutes. and you're not allowed to leave the exam in the last 10 minutes. So we all right, okay, so we've got to do this in so like, under 50 minutes and after 15 minutes, so that's okay. And we started off going bum 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 bum. And next minute Richie's getting up and going out. And I'm going, what the hell's the time? And it was 15 minutes on the dot. 50 questions. He just gone, right, I'm off. So we're going,
He was sitting there tapping his fingers on the desk, waiting for
waiting for
those
the
last 4 minutes to
50
pass so that he could
minutes.
just get up and
Oh
go.
man, it was so funny. And
Oh, good.
then the lad who was there for like, 6 months was the last one to leave, and that was just after me. So it was I started off going, first question. Skip the first question. Let's try the second question. I went, oh, second question is multiple choice. Oh, it's C. So I colored in B. I went, oh God, get the rubber and rub it out. I thought, what am I doing? I've skipped the first question. I've got the second question. I haven't even answered it right, even if it was wrong. I've put the wrong flipping answer down. Oh, this is going fabulous, this. So after half an hour, I'd finished, and I'd missed seven questions. So I went back and went over those seven questions and started really thinking about them, and spent the next 15 minutes on those seven questions. They were so hard.
And then
Anyway,
just put
we'll.
A, but for all of them.
Yeah, just yeah, I must get some of these right. Yeah. So, anyway, yes, we'll
Well,
see how
to
we
get
go.
us back onto books, I have never read a book about wine.
Lee's got one.
But to jump back one more subject before we finish today, well, before I finish what my books are for the day, I just wanted to point out that I do so much non-fiction reading about the psychology of cults and coercive control and psychological abuse and harm and how to recover from psychological abuse. So when Lee came home one day and he'd bought me the new Robert Galbraith book, I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, I have not read. This was in the middle of my master's as well, so I was reading even more than I usually would have been. And our non-fiction stuff. And I said, I can't wait to sit down with a cup of tea in bed with my pillows propped up and read this really thick fictional book. And it had one of those paper covers on the hardback, so I could use that as the bookmark. I was so excited. I was like, this is the biggest Robert Galbraith book that's been released. And I'm going to lock myself in my room for a whole week. I'll just read you the opening sentences in the prologue for this book. Will, we were appalled to learn from your personal tutor yesterday that you've dropped out of university and joined some kind of religious movement. We're even more astounded that you didn't discuss this with us or bother to tell us where you were going. Unless we're being lied to by the woman who answers the phone at the headquarters of the Universal Humanitarian Church, handwritten letters are the only means of contacting members. So I read those first few sentences and I said, there is absolutely no way that this fictional book is about to be about a fictional cult. And it was absolutely a book about a cult. It even mentioned Stephen Hassan and Robert J. Lifton in the book, who are like two of the world's most infamous cult experts. And I think J.K. Rowling had actually consulted with Steve Hassan when she wrote this book. So Steve Hassan is somebody that I'm in touch with, that I've worked with as a fellow cult expert myself. And I was like, there's no way this book is about a cult. And it was still a great book, but can you believe it? Like, you try and get yourself out of reading one particular thing and you just end up reading the same thing just in fiction. But it was really accurate. It was a very accurately depicted fictional cult, if that makes sense. And just the last thing for me that I wanted to say is that I've got a book I want to read. It's a play called 12 Angry Men. I've always wanted to read 12 Angry Men, and I've never read it. And I've never watched it because I want to read it. I think there's like two or three film versions of 12 Angry Men. So I've never read the play, watched the play, watched the films. I've got a couple of Douglas Adams books on my list. And my partner reads Terry Pratchett all the time. He has just bookshelves full of Terry Pratchett books. So I've read a couple of the shorter ones, but 12 Angry Men is something that I'm like, I'm gonna read that. What I need to read something. What should I read? 12 Angry Men, and then I just never do. So yeah, I mean, talking about books we've read and books we want to read, 12 Angry Men is at the top of my list.
12 Angry Men is a very good film. The original is a very good film. I don't know about the others. And Terry Pratchett, I've read all of the Discworld series. Took me a long time, and when I finished it, I was annoyed because you can tell by the getting on as it got near the end of his life. Sadly, his writing did suffer, I think. But what he did to one of my favourite characters at the last in the last book was a bit annoying, so I wasn't happy with that. But I've done Terry Pratchett. Some great stuff came out of there, and I was tempted to put him down as one of the authors because like I say, I have read all of those books. I have them on my list here. I think there's 41 in total, but he's not a one trick pony. He has written other things. But I've only read the Discworld series, so 1983 to 2015. So there you go, Sean.
There we go. That's been our perusal of favorite authors. But the ink on the page is dry, the bookshelves are empty, the pages are frayed, and the box is full of cold grease. So we'll see you again on the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. All right, so we'll see you guys in a month.
Has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.